This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen. As-salatu as-salamu bi Kareem Muhammad wa alayhi tayyibin wa sahbihi salihin. I greet you with the Islamic greetings of peace. As-salamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. So, I'd like to thank NYM Inc. for setting up this event. You, esteemed audience, for attending. And I suppose trying to the organizers for kind of picking a subject, which I think many Muslims are very confused about, and has caused, I think, a lot of fitna, especially in the Muslim community, not just in the non-Muslim community. So what do we mean by all this kind of chaos and polarization? What they really mean is this kind of war between the left wing and the right wing. And many Muslims are kind of finding themselves in the middle of this war, not knowing who to support. The right wing, some of the right wing are like conservative Christians, and they have certain beliefs which are very similar to ours, but these very same individuals don't like Muslims or don't trust Islam being in their midst. And on the other side, the left wing welcome us with open arms to say, we will defend your right to have an identity. But of course, there's a price tag that comes with that, which is in the name of tolerance. So they'll say, because we tolerate you, you have to tolerate others. And how we define tolerance is that you have to believe that other people's lifestyle choices, beliefs and religions are just as equally valid and good as yours, according to your moral worldview. So all they are, they're happy for you to keep your identity, they just want you to change your beliefs. Whereas the right wing, they want you to kind of change your identity, or at least eliminate what they view to be as not loyal to the state or not loyal to the culture of the society. So when you call yourself, let's say, a Muslim first, they will have a problem with that. They want you to call yourself an American first, or a Canadian first, or a French person first, or a British person first, and then Muslim. If you say you're Muslim first, they have a problem with that. And of course, the far right just want to get rid of you, full stop. And preferably, they would probably want to see Muslims not, and perhaps even immigrants or sons of immigrants or anyone who is not of the particular majority ethnic group to leave their lands. So that's kind of where we find ourselves. Many of you, any of you go to university? Anyone here go to university? Put your hands up. University students. What are from the sisters there? Anyone? Any of you go to university? Okay, quite a few. Well, at university, that's where a lot of you will encounter this kind of a choice between left wing and right wing. And many Muslims, because sometimes it's happened, our mosques are very apolitical, right? They don't want Muslims to kind of, let's say, they don't want to talk or discuss how Islam is a comprehensive way of life, can provide practical solutions for the world's problems, because they're worried it would be too controversial, that the media would pay too much attention to them and the politicians would put them in a spotlight. So they want to keep things just purely on, let's say, ritual ibadah actions only, and discussions of aqidah limited only to the belief of monotheism, and that's more or less it, more or less. But there's a cost to that, to avoiding fitna, avoiding controversy by not discussing Islam holistically. There's a price tag to that. And the price tag is that many of you young individuals, as young people are wont to do, want to make the world a better place. They want to combat injustice. They want to find their place in the world to do something, to make a change. But if Islam isn't giving them any option to make a change, or giving them any guidance to make a change, they'll find plenty of other ideologies that do promise to make a change. And these ideologies, like secular liberalism and social justice warriors and all this stuff, they have their own idea of what change looks like. And so many Muslims who desire to combat racism, for example, and to combat discrimination, and to combat some of the kind of excesses you might see in Western society, so to combat sexual harassment, for example, will be told, you can combat this if you adopt a particular belief, which we define as, let's say, the idea of feminism. And in this belief, the problem is not that humans are fallible and commit acts of crimes, and it doesn't really matter what gender you are, because criminals are all kinds of genders, right? You can be any kind of a gender and you commit crime, and want to commit crime, and be selfish, and be abusive to others. It doesn't really matter. No, they explain it as, there's a conspiracy called the patriarchy. And the patriarchy is basically a systematic hierarchy of society devised by men purposely to keep women down. And so many sisters and some brothers will think, yeah, that sounds like a bad thing. Yeah, let's fight against that. And of course, this then precipitates a gender sectarianism, where basically things which are bad are called toxic masculinity. But then at the same time, gender is a social construct, so masculinity is a social construct. But yet, at the same time, it can be toxic, or men are prone to being misogynists. So is it men as a sex, or men as a socially constructed gender? What is causing the problem? Where is this, and how comes in almost virtually every culture and society around the world, you've had roughly very similar gender roles throughout history, going back literally 100,000 years, right? So they'll argue it's a big conspiracy, and this is how we have to deal with it. What about against racism? Well, Islam has an analysis of where racism comes from. It's just a type of asabiyya, or what we call tribalism. In fact, Islam doesn't have a word for racism. The hatred of a race, but we're all the same race. Human race, right? Bani Adam. But what you do get is, because humans have different tribes, they tend to hate each other based on different tribes. And it's not limited to how much melanin is in your skin. People of the same ethnic group, same religion, but different tribes can hate each other. Just as much as a white supremacist might hate immigrants. So the Western kind of, let's say, SJW concept of racism, coming from what they call critical race theory, which is the ideological construct they come up with, really starts discriminating off the bat. In fact, in a way, using the word racism is racist. Because if you say, oh, you're discriminating against black people, you're saying they're a different race, if you call that racism. But aren't we all the same race? If you speak to any anthropologist, anyone here study anthropology in university? Or knows an anthropologist professor? No? Everyone just studies engineering and things like that, right? All right. Just ask an anthropologist. An anthropologist is someone who studies humans and human history. What will they tell you? They'll say that it's ridiculous to use the term race. It's completely ridiculous. To call everyone from sub-Saharan Africa as black people, as if black people only are in sub-Saharan Africa, and if they're only one tribe and only one ethnicity, is ridiculous. There's multiple tribes, multiple languages, multiple religions and cultural backgrounds. And of course, they're not the only place in the world that has skin shades of that color. In South India, it's the same. In Australasia, they have the same, you know, shades of skin. So to say black people is sub-Saharan Africans is inaccurate, to say the least. And using the word white people as well, to say, there's a problem with white people being being historically racist towards other peoples. There are Arabs who have skin colours which are paler than some Europeans. Are they white people? What about Iranians? Are they white people? Persians, basically. They're white people. There's Pakistanis who are pale. Some even have green eyes. Right? Are they white people or not white people? Hispanics, which are called some are generically just called brown people. Hispanics are actually a combination of European, African American, and Native American. But they all intermarried over many centuries, and so they just became one. Well, maybe not homogenous mass, but they've just been labeled as one, you know, the Hispanics. But according to critical race theory, which is the ideas which are taught by SJW, by kind of promoting by SJWs and things like this, there is a racism between whites and blacks, and they might make allowances for like browns and the quote unquote browns and Asians, or what we call Southeast Asians. In England, Asians refer to people from the Indian subcontinent. So, critical race theory, the problem in that is where it originated from. It came from basically in America, United States of America. Because United States of America, you had a whole bunch of immigrants. Immigrants from Europe, immigrants from, immigrants from other parts of the world, from obviously from India, and of course, the descendants of slaves that were brought against their will from West Africa. But here's the problem that developed in the United States, because when all these Europeans came and after a couple of generations they spoke English, some were like Polish, for example, some were French, some were from Spain, so they're not Hispanic, but they're Spanish, Italians. After a couple of generations they spoke English, and it was hard to tell where any one of those from unless that you hear their name or you know about their background. Or you know where maybe which part of the United States they're from, maybe think from Jersey, probably Italian, or Italian descended, right? So instead, they made these broad categories. They just say whites and blacks and reds to refer to the Native Americans. They made these very general categories because you can't tell the difference between a Polish descendant in America and from an Irish descendant in America, from an English descendant in America, and so they made these broad categories. But in Europe, people tell the difference all the time. And one of the many reasons for Brexit was cited by people who were pro-Brexit was they didn't want all these Polish immigrants coming into UK and taking their jobs. They were very much discriminating against Polish people. But in America, they just kind of amalgamated them into one category. And so when Muslims adopt these ideologies, trying to solve real problems, there are real problems of discrimination in the United States of America, probably exist in Canada too, exist in Europe as well, but Europe is a bit more multifaceted, so they would discriminate against other Europeans as well as people from outside Europe. So it's multifaceted in Europe. The problem is that it perpetuates the problem as much as it can solve it. Because when you say that there must be a striving of the non-whites against white supremacy or a white preeminence, what you do is you make everyone's skin color politicized into a community. You reinforce it. You reinforce the idea that people are categorized by skin color. And not every, let's say, white American is rich and powerful. Not every white American is rich and powerful. Many of them are, what you call, was it Hicks or hillbillies or rednecks and the denizens of trailer parks. These people, They are poor and looked down upon. They're called, you know, poor white trash, even by the upper classes in the United States. And so for them, when they don't have any power, and then they see that that there's all this campaigning and positive, what they call positive discrimination for minorities, which are non-white minorities in the States, they feel that they've been left out, and because they're white, and no one cares about them. And then they become radicalized and they will support politicians they think will care for them, like a certain politician with orange skin and strange hairstyle. Right? Now, as I said, calling these things out doesn't mean that there isn't problems. Of course, but as a Muslim, we would analyze things differently. We would say the problem in the United States is the problem of asabiyya, where people define themselves into tribes and claim their tribe is better than others, or their tribe it deserves special privileges over others, or they only care about if something happens to their tribe, a member of their tribe, they will care about that. If something happens to a member of the other tribe, they wouldn't care about that. And the Quran says, stand forth for justice, even against yourselves. So as Muslims, anyone who's being mistreated, and anyone who's being treated unjustly, deserves our concern and deserves us to fight for them. But you see, when we look at the Islamic lens, through the Islamic lens, and we see everyone through the lens of, these are Bani Adam, these are the one tribe of Adam alayhi salam. And as Muslims, we're meant to bear witnesses, to be shuhada, witnesses, to bear witnesses to mankind of the truth, to guide mankind, to show people there's a better alternative. There's a better alternative to the false dichotomies that you have in your society. Trying to group people into different racial groups and then pit them against each other because you have collectively said all whites are privileged and all blacks are underprivileged, it creates rancor and tension. Rather, what you should say is, everyone who's poor in the United States of America deserves to be helped outside of poverty. And anyone who is maltreated by the police deserves to get justice against the police. And any police person who mistreats anyone should get punished for doing so. That would be the Islamic perspective. It destroys asabiyya, because on the Day of Judgment, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala won't care how much melanin is in your skin. Allah won't care. He'll care how much sin you've done, how much taqwa you have, and whether you had sincerity in your heart. That's what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will judge. And those who are righteous and receive His mercy, their faces will be brightened. And those people who rejected the truth, who were hypocrites, who were arrogant and had pride, their faces will be darkened. And in the Day of Judgment, there'll be all different races in each of these groups. And you don't want to be in the face, you don't want to be in the group of those whose faces become darkened because they're going to be punished for their sin. You want to be in the group of those faces who are brightened with a nur. It's not referring to skin color. It's referring to the nur of those who are saved. And as regards going back to feminism, so we revisit that. Does it mean to critique or not adopt feminism? Does it mean that we deny that there are women who are raped, there are women who are sexually harassed, there are women, and even looking into the Muslim community, there are women who are kind of misled and divorced or abused in the domestic home? We're not denying any of this stuff. And if we hear about it, we should come down upon the perpetrators of this abuse with full force if we find out. And of course, but Islam wouldn't limit it to just looking at the gender. A man who abuses his wife is guilty. A wife who abuses her husband, which does happen as well, maybe not as much, but it does happen, that's also guilty. It's also wrong. Islam doesn't care the gender of the perpetrator. There's only one gender for perpetrators of injustice, and they're called criminals. That's the only gender that Islam looks at. And so, but to then address the problems that some women face, or that many women face, by saying these problems come from a war between the sexes, a war between men and women, well, that's just ridiculous. That's completely ridiculous. I mean, have you ever heard of a domestic abuser, let's say a male domestic abuser in court, telling the judge, well, the reason why I did it, Your Honor, is because we're part of a war against women and we have to keep them down. So I had to do my bit. No, he doesn't. He doesn't say that. the judge would come down really harsh on him, or maybe he'd go to a mental hospital to check his sanity, because it's ridiculous. But when feminists would use terms, but see, the thing is this: if Western ideology, or rather liberalism, believes everyone is equal, I'm going to tell you where this all comes from now, where the idea of misogyny and patriarchy, why they have to come up with these ideas, why they must come up with these ideas, is to hide a reality that they don't like. Which is, they believe everyone's equal. Everyone has equal power and equal capability. Okay. But then how comes nature never got the memo? How comes, in terms of human beings, males have a particular type of nature's steroid, basically testosterone, which makes you taller, bigger, and tend to be stronger? So in a family, between a brother and a sister, both from the same parents, brothers will tend to be stronger than their siblings. I mean, you might get a woman that's stronger than some men, yes, but generally speaking, between brothers and sisters, i.e. when the genes are roughly kind of from the same parents, all things being equal, testosterone causes a difference. The purpose of testosterone is to basically make you bigger, stronger, more muscle mass. It also is the reason why in the Olympics and in most sports they keep the genders segregated, even in the West. Gender segregation. Oh, everyone's equal, why not participate together? Oh, what, you don't want to do that? Why not? Isn't gender just a social construct? Right? It's not. Right? Now, we can debate as to the effects of testosterone. Does it cause a lack of aggression, or the ability to engage in more risk-taking, perhaps? Does that have an advantage when human beings are in the wild and basically facing wild animals, or trying to achieve goals related to protecting the tribe, which involve risk? That's a whole lot of discussion and debate. But testosterone, I think there's no debate about it. It causes physiological differences. Okay. Now imagine in a society, or any society, whereby there's one group of one type of human which is stronger than another type of human. And say that in that society, 3%, which is roughly what happens in most society, 3% of society are criminals. Right? 3% of society are serial criminals. So 3% of women will be criminals, and 3% of men will be criminals. Okay. But the 3% of women who are criminals, being the fact that they're not as strong as men, will not be able to have the opportunity to commit physical abuse as much as their counterparts, because they would be physically weaker. But the 3% of criminals amongst men who are stronger have more ability to use that strength to cause abuse. That's unfortunately nature. It doesn't mean that men are more desiring to commit criminal acts. Although you could argue that the fact that 95% of the jails are filled with men might be a bearing on what testosterone does. But then here's a problem. If a liberal admits that nature makes human beings a bit different, then it contradicts their idea that everyone's absolutely equal. But then how do they explain maybe aggression born of testosterone, perhaps, or the ability to be more willing to take risks? Which, okay, it's debated at the moment amongst psychologists, between liberal psychologists and those who just want to study the facts of what biology says. But anyway, so how do they explain it? They say, no, this is not biology. This does not come from biology. This is invented by society. The parents teaching men to be like this, and the parents teaching women to be another way, that what creates the personality differences. Because to admit that it's actually something that might be a biological component means that human beings are not all equal in the terms of they're not identical. But liberalism wants to believe that everyone, it's aqidah, starts with that everyone is identical. But that's not really born, you know, you can't really see that in nature anyway. I mean, some people are going to have better immune systems than others, some people more intelligent than others, some people are fitter, more athletic than others, some people have a better metabolism than others. I was just telling I was just having a conversation with one of the brothers who picked me up from the airport today. And I was saying that I was talking about like obesity in the United States of America and the statistic that 1 in 3 Americans are extremely obese. And I thought that's hard to believe until I went to America and I actually saw it for myself. But in Canada, you don't seem to have the same kind of, not the same degree. But that being said, I've noticed two things, which is I haven't seen many Iranian men or Somali men who are fat. And he was telling me, the brother was Somali, he was saying, yeah, and like in my family, you know, like he was referring to his son that, you know, eats a lot, like incredible amounts, but doesn't really get fat. And I said, well, that's genetics, I suppose. Doesn't mean that there's no fat Persian men and fat Somali men, but you know, there's certain tendencies in amongst Persians, perhaps, and Somali men anyway. So, metabolism, you're born with it, I suppose. So there are differences that human beings are born with, but liberalism doesn't want to admit that because it goes against the aqidah that everyone is identical. When it means equal, it means identical. So instead, how do they explain that disproportionate amount of men commit crime or abuse or physical abuse in marriage? They say that this is all part of a deliberate conspiracy called the patriarchy, designed specifically to oppress women and keep them on the lower tiers of society. And that every culture which has made use of men being stronger by being a warrior caste or a defender caste against like wild animals or other tribes and things, this was not because men weren't chosen to be soldiers just because they were stronger and fitter and so on, which would be criteria you'd want in a soldier and would be more advantageous, surely. No. They were the warrior caste because they wanted to keep the power for themselves in order to oppress women. And that's where the aqidah of liberalism leads people to leads to these conclusions. And I've seen in the Muslim community, it's starting now, or not it's starting, it's, I suppose it's getting bigger and bigger, conflict and tensions between Muslims based on their sex and based on their ethnic group. But not just the kind of jahiliyyah that we know in the Muslim world, where like a Khaliji will look down on an Egyptian, and an Egyptian might look down on a North African, and so on and so forth. Even amongst Arabs, right? They have, you know, the typical asabiyya. No. It's now an even advanced form of this. It's they will group white Muslims into one group, black Muslims into one group, Pakistanis Indian subcontinent Muslims into one group, and then pit them against each other. And they say to white reverts, oh, you have privilege because of your race, and you don't understand how other Muslims of different races are experiencing and feeling. And it's like, why are we even looking at ourselves through this lens? And it's also ridiculous because, as anyone, if you ask any revert that's converted to Islam, as soon as if they look Muslim, if they look visibly Muslim in the Western society, they've lost any privileges they have. They're no longer a privileged white person. They're just a Muslim. And I've seen Muslims being called who become, I'll say, reverts to Islam from European backgrounds, who become Muslim. They get called race traitor, traitors against their own race, which is ridiculous. What race is that? You know, the descendants of Adam alayhi salam. Well, I'm pretty sure he's a Muslim too, so it was ridiculous. But you see how that lens is now influencing in the Muslim community now. It's getting more into the Muslim community. We're seeing each other as different. Because what they'll say, and they'll but there is, you see, the thing is, all truth, so all falsehood has a little bit of truth in it. A little bit of truth. They'll point to the asabiyya, the tribalism amongst the Muslim community, amongst Jahil Muslims. They'll say, oh, look how Arabs look down upon sub-Saharan Muslims, how Arab Muslims look down upon sub-Saharan Muslims, or how Turks look down upon Arabs. And they'll simplify it and just say, Muslims with lighter skin look down upon Muslims with darker skin. And then they'll start to cause tension and animosity. Whereas the reality is it's not some conspiracy between a particular race of Muslims against another race of Muslims. No, it's just that the Muslim world, because we're not united by Islam, because we don't see each other as one ummah, and we don't look at our interest as one interest, like our ancestors used to do, what happens is that we look out for ourselves and our own family, and first our family, then our own locale in the city, then our own town, then our tribe or basic area. So we might say, so a person maybe who lives in Lahore, for example, in Pakistan, might be looking out for their family first. And they'll prioritize their family over all the neighbors' families, and then they'll prioritize their neighborhood over all the neighborhoods. And then they'll be partial to Lahore against, let's say, Karachi, perhaps. Or then they'll say, they'll prioritize or affiliate with Punjabis against Balochis. And then as it expands up, they'll like Pakistanis versus Bangladeshis. And it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. It's not a dedicated hatred between races that exists amongst Muslims. No, it's asabiyya. Muslims, all viewing each other as different, just based on geography, just even being a different family on the same street. We don't bring critical race theory into Islamic discussions. Don't bring it into, it will divide us. It will completely divide us. We are Muslim. Our peace is one. Our God is one. Our wars are one. It's what the Prophet Muhammad taught. We're all one. There's no difference. And you know what? It's not like there wasn't asabi at the time of the Prophet Muhammad. You know, Arabs looked down upon people from Habesha. And they said, with Bilal, they said, one in particular Arab was having a discussion and got angry with Bilal and said, "Oh, you son of a black mother." And when the Prophet Muhammad heard of this, he chastised that Sahabi. He said, "What he's doing?" He showed that his Sahabi, what he was doing was ridiculous. Adam alayhi salam wasn't Arab, wasn't any particular ethnic group, and Adam came from mud. And people having pride over their lineage, ridiculous. And the person felt so much ashamed that he's put his head on the ground, and he said, "I'm not going to lift my head until Bilal puts his foot on it," which, as you know, amongst Arabic culture, is like to put your head to show someone your shoe is viewed to be one of the powerful insults, because it means you're worth less than the dirt underneath their feet. So for someone, this Sahabi, he put his head on the ground and he wouldn't lift it until Bilal put his foot on top of it. Was it because there was a conspiracy or a structured racism whereby Arabs just necessarily hated people of darker skin color? Well, no, because Arabs actually have a variety of skin colors amongst themselves. No, it was just common everyday asabiyya, tribalism. That's what it was. But what the critical race theories do, they say, look, you see this hatred between this person of this color skin and this person of this color skin, it's because of the color of skin. So no, it's because of jahiliya. It's because we don't see each other as one tribe. One tribe. If you know what, there's only one racist I can actually think of, real racist that I can think of, and that's really Iblis. Because he's of different race. He's the jinn. And he didn't like humans. He was arrogant. He thought jinn is better than humans. You could say he's a racist, because it's a different race. But amongst us, we're the same race. So, my brothers and sisters, don't join in the sectarian wars in the West happening between the two madahib in the West, the right-wingers and the left-wingers. Don't join in. don't think that you have to adopt their akidah or their beliefs, but rather you tell the conservatives, you say, look, you believe in the, some of them believe in the Bible. That's good. If you want to believe in the Bible, it's your choice, right? It's better than being secular, all right? But we believe in the same God. We believe in Isa alayhi salam. We believe in the Torah. And all everything you find in the Bible, or so anything you find in the Quran that you don't like, open up your Bible, you'll see it there, times 10. It's all there. Not, you know, do you think Islam brought something completely new? No, it didn't. When they say, oh, you know, Muslims can commit polygamy, this is against our values. I said, tell me where in the Bible polygamy is outlawed. In the Old Testament, it's allowed. And Jesus never abrogated it, so... And in West Africa, Christians practice it. Yeah. The word Allah, I was discussing in some of my lectures about misconceptions against Islam. The word Allah, they say it's a foreign name for God. It's a foreign God. It's not our God, they say. And I say, oh really? So Jesus used the English word God, did he? Jesus spoke which language? Aramaic. It's Aramaic. It's a Semitic language. Like Arabic is a Semitic language. Like Hebrew is a Semitic language. Aramaic is related to Hebrew, basically. What's the Aramaic word for God? Well, if you look at Passion of the Christ, where this is film using where the actors all spoke Aramaic to simulate the language that was most likely spoken by around the time of Jesus, just wait for the subtitles to say God and listen to what word they say when the subtitles say God. The actor playing the alleged character, the alleged depiction of Jesus in the New Testament, whenever he uses the word God, he says Elah. Why? Because in Aramaic and in Hebrew, God is spelt, and I'm using Hebrew letters here, Aleph, Lamed, He. That's Hebrew letters. Aleph, Lamed, He. In Arabic, what is the words for God? Well, how is it spelt? Alif, Lam, Ha. Okay, two lambs, but Ilam as well. You know, the word for God is the same root. Alif, Lam, Ha. Same word. If Jesus came today, he wouldn't understand Dios or Dieu or God from the pagan German word God. He wouldn't understand those words. He'd understand the Muslim Salah when he said Allah. Oh, they're talking about God. He'd understand what our language. So make the conservatives realize that we're not an alien religion. We are Abrahamic. And they would do well to make alliances with us to protect the religious rights that we believe, the common beliefs we have in Abrahamic faiths and the common values we have. Now to the left-wingers, when they say to you, we will protect you, your right to identify as a Muslim. However, could you also be tolerant to certain people, certain lifestyles, LGBTQI or transsexuals or so on and so forth? Could you be tolerant? And what we mean by tolerant is that you affirm that what they're doing is morally right, morally okay, it's fine, it's good. I say, excuse me, since when did tolerance require conformity or conformance? That's not tolerance. You're not actually being tolerant to us then. Just because we don't believe that you should go around committing violence against people just because they have a preference, a sexual preference. We're talking about preference. Preference is different from activity, by the way. Just so you know, there's no word in the Quran or Sunnah, or in the Bible even, for homosexual, heterosexual, bisexual. That was invented in the 19th century. The words in the Quran and in the Bible talk about like luti, refers to people who do actions, not people who have desires. Make sure you the difference is clear on this. Because if you say homosexuality will put someone in hell, what a Westerner understands when you say that is you're saying that someone who has a desire they can't choose will go to hell no matter what they do. That's what they understand when you say that. Don't use the word homosexual or bisexual or even heterosexual. It's not a Quranic term. It's not in the Hadith. It's not in the Bible. Heck, even the ancient Greeks never had a word for that, even though some of them did certain practices of same-sex practices. They didn't discriminate people by labels. Remember, we were talking about labeling with critical race theory and the kind of labels of men versus women and that kind of sectarian fighting. Well, in that idea of in that kind of liberals discuss with concerns LGBTQI, they say, if you have a desire, a same-sex desire, you are now part of a community which has a culture, which has they are a distinct community, distinct from other communities. So wait a second, since when does having a particular desire mean that you have to have a culture? Or it's linked to a culture? Or that you, well, just if you like the people of the same sex, you must like Broadway musicals. Right? That's ridiculous. You're defining people by one preference. It's ridiculous. It's like saying we can divide the world into people who like Putin and don't like Putin. Yeah? Oh, you like Putin? You're part of the Putin community. That follows Putin culture. Hey, what's Putin culture? What, that you take showers in gravy? What? But that's how ridiculous it is, right? And what I said yesterday when someone asked me this question in the Q&A in Vancouver was, I said, well, they say, what does Islamic law say about homosexuals and heterosexuals and bisexuals and whatever? Well, homosexuals mostly, right? And I said, Islamic law doesn't discriminate homosexuals because it does not discriminate homosexuals. And people's like, what do you mean? Why are you repeating yourself? I said, no. It doesn't discriminate because we don't label people by that in the first place. If you don't give them a label, how can you discriminate against them? Straight up. In the Western history, in their history, in 19th century, a guy called Richard von Krupp von Ebbing, he invented this term and he called it sexual psychopathy. And then everyone who had that desire was labeled according to that desire. And then they started to be singled out for discrimination, treated as insane or mad or what have you. And that's what led to, you could say, the kind of oppressions that occurred, where the people who just had a desire, they didn't even act on it, but they were treated in a bad way. They treat in a bad way. That's not our history. It's not Islamic history. In Islamic governance, the government does not care. The government does not care what you do inside your own home, and doesn't ask questions. Privacy in your own home is respected, but if you go out into public and like you commit zina, for example, in public, you're going to get punished, right? And you know, have you ever realized that the punishment for adultery was only ever administered in the time of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, because people would come up to him and admit to it and wanted punishment, because he'd never be able to find it otherwise if they did in their own house. And one person called Hazal asked his companion to go to the Prophet Muhammad and confess to adultery. And when the Prophet Muhammad heard about this, he said, "Oh Hazal, if only you had kind of wrapped your companion in a cloak," which was like an Arabic, it's like balagha, an expression that means, if only you had told your companion to keep it secret and ask Allah's forgiveness. So in Islam, we never went hunting around against anyone for whether they did zina of any kind. We never went hunting around, we never labeled people as groups. That's Western history. Don't come to us with this. Yeah, we believe same-sex relationship, same-sex intimacy, physical intimacy, is a sin. Of course we believe that. Of course this is the Islamic position. But it doesn't mean now that we treat people who have that desire or even engage in that activity, we treat them unjustly, or we attack them, or we do bad things to them. It doesn't mean that. Can you not disagree with someone without attacking them or hating them? But the left-wing liberals, they say to you, no, unless you approve of what they do, you're intolerant. Say, excuse me, you're the ones who are intolerant now, because you're forcing us to change our beliefs. Otherwise, you won't protect us. Sorry. Now, it doesn't mean that you should kind of just give them, you know, say, give them the hand, talk to the hand, right? It doesn't mean you say that. You can give dawah to them and make them understand. Say, look, if you're saying that people should not be mistreated or people should not be treated unjustly purely based on their desires, we agree with you. We agree. And if you believe that people shouldn't just be attacked on the street because of what they do in the privacy of their own homes, we agree. People shouldn't be attacked or mistreated or discriminated against for what they do in the privacy of their own homes. We agree with this. But don't ask us to morally accept some people's lifestyle choices that contradict the Quran and Sunnah. We're not going to compromise on what Islam says. But you don't have to ask us to compromise. Make them realize. Make them realize there's another way. They can just say, you know what? You disagree with that person's lifestyle choices. You don't approve of it. You think it's not moral according to your basis. But you're willing to lakum dinakum waliya deen. Follow your deen and leave people to follow their deen. You know what? We liberals, we've learned to accept this. We will accept this now. We will accept that you can do that. And we will protect you still. That's what you have to make them realize. Not that you should go to them and say, protect us. But I'm just saying that when they want to do collaboration with you, make it clear your limits and your conditions. Say that we believe that everyone should have the right to not be molested, attacked, mistreated, abused for what they do in the privacy of their own home according to their own belief system, following their own deen. Yeah, of course. But remember, we'll kind of appear on platforms if that's what you're going to say. But if you're going to say, come on our platforms and have pride in some people's lifestyle choices, well, I'm sorry, I'm not here. Why do you need me to approve of people's lifestyle choices? That's not tolerance. So anyway, I hope this is kind of giving you some guidance. That when dealing with left wing and when dealing with right wing, don't compromise. You don't have to wear a hijab using the Canadian flag, the American flag, or the English flag to convince conservative that you're loyal and that you're not a threat to the state. I mean, since when do they wear clothes made out of Union Jacks and Canadian flags and American flags and so on? Okay, some wacky Americans do, but I mean, apart from them, right? How come they don't require loyalty tests? Americans who are not immigrants, they are anarchists, or they hate the American government, or they prefer other governments than the American government. But no one ever says to them, oh, we don't trust these people, they need loyalty tests. Oh no, but that's because they're viewed as indigenous, even though in America they're not indigenous anyway. But they're viewed as the majority group, right? Whereas in England that's slightly the case anyway. Whereas when it comes to us, oh no, you have to take loyalty tests. We have to see that you are like more Canadian, more American, more British than even the British, American, Canadians are. Well, I'm sorry, that's discrimination now. All you can ever ask for us, all you can ever ask from us, is that we stick to the law of the land. We made an agreement to live here. It's like it forms a dhimma, a contract, a covenant, right? We'll stick to the covenant. That's all you should be able to. All you should ask for us and from any citizen. But then to say no, you have to do more than that. You have to follow our values as I define the values to be. So, well, I'm sorry, who are you? If we're equal citizens, then who are you to tell us what values are meant to define? That you're the ones who can define those values, not us. Right? Even then, we're not going to impose our values on you. We're going to call you to our values, but if you don't want to accept, fine. But we're not going to demand you follow our values. So make sure the conservatives know this, the right wing know this. As for the left wing, make sure they know, and that we're not going to follow. We're not going to approve of what they approve of, in order to be protected by them. And I think finally, as a final point before I end this. I think the final point is what to do with the right wing, right? Those Aryan supremacists, right? Well, as for the Aryan supremacists, you can just remind them that Aryans came from India, and so basically they are in essence Indian, right? But I mean, okay, those they really can't be reasoned with, generally speaking, but. You can discuss with the conservatives and you can discuss with the left wingers and make them understand you that Islam is not left or right wing. You're not a conservative Muslim. You're not a liberal Muslim. You're just a Muslim. We're a third way. We're an alternative way of life, and we're here to call people to it, because the people currently, they're stuck in a dichotomy with contradictions they can't solve. Show them there's an alternative. Call them to an alternative, and that's what Dawah is all about, and that's why, inshallah, we're here today to learn about, is to be able to call mankind to an alternative they don't know, an alternative they desperately need to know about. So, Jazakallah khair.